Talofa, Bula, Malo. Welcome to Pacific Rugby Players Radio. All things Pacific Rugby, all things about us. A place where we take time to talk the big and small issues, share stories and have a few laughs with current and past Pacific Rugby players around the world. So whether on the team bus, driving home from training or on the physio table, sit back, chill and dig down deep on the issues that affect us. Pacific Rugby Players. Here's your host for today.
Malo, everybody. Thanks for joining us today on another PRP podcast. My name's Aidan Clark. I'm here with our personal development team, Gaylene, Junior and Marion, and co-hosted today with our PRP chairman, Haleti Pohl, for a really important session talking about property. This is a subject that many players ask about, whether it's trying to buy their first home or their next investment property. There's always plenty of questions about how it all works in the finance game and what process you need to go through to get into the market. We're really privileged today to have a bit of a legend of the game, both in New Zealand and Europe, in Issa Ngathiwa. Issa recently retired from rugby in Leinster and is now in the financial advisory game, working for a company called Money Empire in Auckland. Really privileged to have him along. He's probably going to share a lot of good points around his own transition and his challenges that he's had for himself and his post-rugby career. But we're going to drill down even more into specifics of property. Ask him all those curly questions. Is it a good time to buy? What is COVID-19 going to do to the market? How do I approach a mortgage broker? How do I talk to my bank? This is going to be a great chat. So make sure you tune in, you've got your pad and pen ready to go and get some notes and really sit back and enjoy this workshop. Evening, everybody. Just like to welcome everybody to our second week of Pacific Rugby Players workshops. We have had some real the pleasure, actually, of bringing some awesome workshops last week. To everybody around the world with our guests, and the feedback has been awesome, and we've used some of the feedback from everybody to help shape the subjects for this week. And already I can see plenty of people jumping online, so the popularity of what we're doing seems to be pretty high, which is fantastic for us to be able to offer it to all the players who are in lockdown, and using this opportunity to do some personal development. This morning for our session, myself and Hale will, Hale's co-hosting with me today, and he's going to be fielding all your questions through the chat. So if you've got any questions that you'd like to ask our special guest on our subject, whatever they are, no question is a dumb question, please fire it through, or even just put your hand up and turn your mic on, and we'll roll with it. We've got a set structure at the start just to get the ball rolling, but really it's about you, your questions, and making sure we try and get all the information that you want through to you. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Issa Ngathiwa. Many of you, probably doesn't take much of an introduction, to be honest. Auckland Blues and Leinster superstar. We actually went across to Leinster in around 2008, I think, bro.
Yep.
Over there for many years, captained the team through to a European Cup win, and then retired from rugby, hung the boots up, I think it was 2018. Since then, has been in the financial game with Money Empire, but I'll let him talk a little bit more about that. So it's fantastic for us to get Issa here to talk around actually any range of sort of financial advice, but specifically today, because of the questions we had last week, we're going to talk a lot things about property, finance for property, and getting you all into a position where you have information to make good decisions. Issa, good morning, bro. I think you're in Auckland. How's things? How's isolation life?
Yeah, it's pretty unique, that's for sure. I remember being up north at the beach at New Year's, and that just seemed like a lifetime ago. I was actually in Dublin about 6 weeks ago now, and I remember when I left, the whole place, the whole of Europe was shutting down around me, and it was like a cross between the Amazing Race and zombie apocalypse, just to try and get back down to little New Zealand. So. Yeah, it was such a weird time, but summer seems like a lifetime ago. But hey, lockdowns, Yeah, you just got to roll with it and just get on with it. I spoke to Aaron Walsh, Chiefs mental skills coach, about three weeks ago now, and he just said, look, you either got to look at it as a massive inconvenience or a really unique opportunity. So, I just sort of roll with it and just get on with it. And it's not often you get to spend this much time with your family. And I've got four girls, and you know, it's all new to them too. So, hey, I get to wake up, have breakfast with them, have lunch with them, don't have to worry about traffic. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, great family time. And obviously trying to balance a bit of your work stuff as well. So before we dive into that, tell us about how you ended up doing what you're doing now, especially, and what that sort of last stage of playing rugby and moving into decision-making about what you're going to do for your post-rugby career.
Yeah, I actually retired twice, so I had a little bit of a leg up this time. I spent 5 years at the Blues, New Zealand, went to Ireland in 2008, and had five successful seasons, and then hung up the boots. And like, my body wasn't broken. It was just a time to bring my girls home to New Zealand and sort of be raising Kiwi life around family. And man, that was awesome. Then I went back overseas, back up to Dublin. And when I retired the first time, I probably didn't prepare as well as I should have. And you know, I learned a lot in the 2 years being back in New Zealand and then going back to Ireland. So I knew that when I had three years to go, I sort of just made the most of it. But then in my last year before retiring, which, you know, I was pretty fortunate, I got to choose when I sort of hung up the boots, which helps massively. But I definitely prepared probably 12 months prior to finishing, just getting a lot of things lined up along the way, whether that was, you know, where we wanted to live, knowing where we were going to move home to. And I started touching base with a guy who runs our company. And I just sort of laid the seed over sort of 12 months to know that I actually had this to come back to. And that was a bit of a luxury, but it definitely helped the transition, because he was, I always made sure I wanted to work for someone that would give me flexibility, and then also just give me the ability to learn along the way, and not actually have to be in such a massive rush. There's nothing worse than that feeling of, man, crap, my rugby contract's finished. How am I meant to pay the mortgage next month? So I actually spent probably about 12 months sort of preparing, and having a few conversations, and just sort of, you know, letting reality hit home that, hey, like, rugby's a professional sport. It's just going to roll on with or without you, whether you are the biggest player in the world or playing, you know, Heartland competition in New Zealand. Like, once you retire, that contract stops and the game rolls on without you. So I had a little bit of time to prepare for that. And, you know, I speak to a lot of guys on transition at the moment, and I think that sort of 3 to 6 months after you retire is pretty important to have some structure around. Sometimes it's just time away from the game and clearing your head in a family holiday. Other times it's, you know, just putting steps in place to transition easy. And I definitely put a lot of time with that, but if I'm being honest, I probably didn't do that until I knew it was going to be my last contract. The other sort of competitive side to me says, hey, look, if you want to be the absolute best and try and win trophies and championships along the way, you've got to give it 110%. And yes, prepare for life after rugby. You know, set yourself up financially if you can. But at the same time, you've got to be pretty in the moment to sort of try chase trophies the way top teams do. So there's a fine balance, but I think in the last 12 months to go, I probably spent a lot of time preparing for what my next few years look like.
And you said there, thinking about that transition, before we move on to the finance, you sort of touched base and said the first time you retired, you probably weren't that well prepared. So what sort of signals and what were the emotions like at that time when you realized that? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we didn't have the family home that we wanted to live in, which, you know, we went to Ireland for 5 years, came back, and, you know, went to Ireland with two suitcases each, came back with three young girls, and all of a sudden that didn't work. So I think there were challenges of going, hey, like, we're not ungrateful for having our house and having our house paid off and what we did, but it just wasn't really ideal. And then, you know, hindsight's a good thing. I walked straight back into a rugby environment at the Blues, which, you know, does real weird things up here in the mind. I went sort of from a Joe Schmidt Leinster era where we won 5 trophies in 5 years to a challenging Blues environment and different egos and personalities. So I definitely, it probably wasn't the best move for me, but it was a good learning curve after I got out of sort of 18 months with that. And then I think that's what motivated me to get away from the rugby bubble. I won't lie, I had some really good offers financially even to stay and coach, but hey, when you've got 4 young girls that have followed you around, I think when you turn into a coach, you turn into a bit of a nomad. Ideally, you get to stay where you are, but you know, if things don't go right, you sort of do hop and chase the next contract. And I just didn't want to do that to my girls just now. There might be a time when I go back into it, but I was also, man, the pressures of being a player, like being a professional sportsman, everyone here will know, like, even if you win a trophy, you might celebrate and have a few pints and enjoy the few days following, but like all of a sudden you're thinking, man, should I eat that other burger? Like, you're starting to think about your diet, you're starting to think about off season. As soon as you're in off season trying to think about the moment, you're thinking about preseason again. As soon as preseason comes around, there's selection, there's body fat, there's all those things. That's the pressure of a, you know, sports person. Like, it's endless. It's twice as bad as a coach, and I've sort of seen that already. So from my point of view, I was like, geez, do I actually want to go back to that? So I don't, like, everyone will relate to this, as everyone on here has been involved professional sport. Like, I got my weekends off. Like, I go for a surf on the weekends. I get to take my girls to the beach every single weekend. Like, I can literally leave my laptop at work 3-4 o'clock on a Friday, and I don't have to pick it up again till Monday. There's something, you become quite institutionalized as a sportsman to being told what to wear, where to be, and you like that schedule. I think, you know, me being an 8-to-4, 9-to-5 type job, it was nice to have a schedule again and know what that looks like, but with a little bit of flexibility. And but, man, I probably didn't know how it was going to affect me going straight back into a sports environment when I've retired the first time. Hence, this time around, I was just ready for a new challenge and wanted to get chucked straight back into the deep end and finance.
Bula mana.
Yeah, bro.
It's Ali here. Once again, we appreciate your time, man. I think it's awesome to have one of our own, and I mean someone that we, most of the guys on the chat that played with, and then into your role there, what you're doing, and it's exciting to hear from you. Normally we tend to get someone out of the rugby circle, and someone or someone that retired 30 years ago, but to have you on board. Speaking about the property and finance, listening firsthand, I'm sure I'm like everyone else will appreciate that. But just the questions, you've touched base on your transition and that feeling. I think we've all been through that, and a lot of the guys here, when they come onto that time, you quickly touch on how you felt finishing. Is there any message there that you could pass on to the players at that stage of their career when they're finishing up, how to deal with that feeling or that pressure?
Yeah, man, I think one thing I tell a lot of guys now is, like, if you've got an ego, man, check that at the door. Like, and that's 100%, man. Like, you've come out of, you know, maybe you've come out of a 10, 15-year career. When you come out of a rugby career that long, and that established, you sort of leave with all that knowledge in your head. Like, you feel pretty comfortable in a rugby environment. Hell, I walked into a finance industry where there was people younger than me that had 15 years experience on me, and they still do. And it's just like, you know what? You are the back of the bus again. I mean, the front of the bus, you're a rookie, and you've sort of got to accept that. No matter if you've done, you know, it's great if you do study and the likes along the way, but the real practicalities of being in a new workplace in a different environment, like, just be prepared that there's a lot of people around you that know a hell of a lot more than you. And that was a pretty uncomfortable feeling, but I think you've got to have a real growth mindset and have that ability to say, do you know what, I've got to start learning again. Because at the end of a professional rugby career, you're pretty sorted, you're pretty comfortable, but just be ready to be uncomfortable again in a new environment. But you got all the skills to work your way through it. I think that's one thing that a lot of guys get scared of. And there's all these cliches out there saying, oh, you know, professional sports, you'll walk into a corporate environment. Be used to being really uncomfortable first, but then understand that you've got all these skills as a professional sportsman to learn along the way. And it won't be easy. There'll be challenges along the way, but you've got all these skills embedded in you that have got you to where you are. Just call on those when needed. And I found that no different. Like, you know, I'm competitive. I like to learn. I know that my colleague Lisa next to me has got 15 years experience on me and she's only 30. So I have to just be willing to learn off her. And I think if people are willing to learn, then you'll be fine going into a new environment.
Awesome. Issa, just to pick up there now, we'll just probably segue a little bit into some of the good juice that the players have got online for is around property. I know that you've been helping out rugby players and so forth in terms of buying their first or their next investment home. What are you seeing as the key things or key bits of advice in that space, especially given the COVID-19 situation or not, that you'll probably pass on if someone was to give you a call today and say, bro, help me out, I'm looking to buy a house?
Yep, so look, I didn't have any, there's nothing against player association or anything, but I was very Harley Tipol early days in what professional development was, so with many of the guys here, and like, I didn't receive any financial advice in my time, nothing really good. You know, I wasn't going to my parents for financial advice along the way. Luckily, I had a sort of a solicitor that helped out a little bit, but I sort of thought, you know what, there's such a missing piece of the puzzle for sports people and rugby players on what practical good advice is. And I've made all the mistakes along the way that a lot of people here might have made, but then there's a lot of people here that I know have done really well from finance, and I sort of pulled that back and said, you know what, everyone should have access to good advice, whether that's top All Blacks, whether that's Heartland Championship, everyone across the world, they should just have the opportunity to have good advice. And I think that's why I sort of have tried to flavor things a little bit differently, especially for the rugby players, to say, hey, if you're overseas, and remember I lived in Dublin for 10 years, if you call up your bank, it's going to be really hard to get something done. That's just the reality of it. With stripping, not even involving COVID-19, I wanted to strip those barriers back and say, hey, come through us. We'll be able to source your mortgage. We'll be able to organize the building inspections. We'll be able to tee you up with a lawyer. We'll be able to give you the best bank structure and make all that seamless. So rugby players can just focus on performing on the field. And the beauty about how we've sort of gone about it is, like, I'm not sitting here in a suit and tie. I'll pick up WhatsApp, use whatever means possible to help guys understand that, hey, if you pick up and call the bank and just can't get anything done, don't feel disheartened. We'll actually figure out a way to get it done for you. And I work with a really sort of young team that sort of really understand the property market. And it seems daunting to begin with, but I'll go all the way from helping guys buy their first property and hold their hand through the whole process to helping guys get 3, 4, 5, 6, the endless, it goes on. And we often, I found a lot of the guys that come to us have got, you know, one or two or three properties, which is great, but it's all in the wrong structure. And bank structure is something I really talk heavily about, and it's not rocket science. None of the investing is sort of real rocket science. It's just about being realistic in what you can do and what you can afford. But, you know, I break down the barriers. A lot of guys here would have said they've had a private banker that's helped them out along the way, understanding that banks are just banks at the end of the day, and some keys around, there's some real key practical changes you can make to your situation that'll benefit you right now, but then more importantly into transition. And the detail behind that is quite immense, but I just sort of make it practical and easy for guys.
just going to roll in. We just had just talking about deposits for someone to buy their first home. What sort of experience have you had in that space? What sort of tips could you pass on to somebody?
Yeah, look, the deposits, reality around deposit is if it's your first home, it was a very different landscape 4 or 5 weeks ago. You're hearing the media that you have to have a 20% deposit. That's not really the case. There's always one or two banks that do low deposit lending. Some banks in particular, this is the difference of why it's good to have sort of independent advice around the banks, because they've all got different lending criteria. So, for instance, Westpac, you can have a 10% deposit and you can get that done pretty easy as long as your servicing stacks up. Before COVID 5 weeks ago, ASB, if you were an ASB client, an ASB existing customer, you could do it on a 5% deposit, where I just got one of the Chiefs boys, without naming names, he got a $566,000 house on a 5% deposit, and the majority of that was KiwiSaver. So don't be disheartened where you always think you've got to have a 20% deposit, because it's not the case. All the banks have these different sort of lending differences, and that's where you just need some good advice around which bank to go to, pretty much.
Yeah, nice. So we then move that on to how you might structure that first mortgage. And so people talk about revolving credit, and I think there's probably a number of different ways. Would you pass on there?
Yeah, firstly, mortgage structure from day one will benefit you massively in the years to come. If you want to do more with property, I didn't know any of this at the time. And often I've got guys coming back and we're sort of rejigging their mortgage structure. And then it's 12 months after that for them to pull trigger and go again. But, for someone that's buying their first home, if it's a young, sports person or an older sports person, it's a real different reality having, a new mortgage. And often, depending on who they are, depending on their circumstance, sometimes I'll just give them a year to get used to it because, hey, it's a big investment at the end of the day. But rugby players in particular, especially a lot of people with excess income and the ability to pay down, your mortgage really quick, it's about saying, hey, look, how do we live comfortably? How do we pay the mortgage? And then whatever's left over to actually pay down. And whereas revolving credit is a great way if you've got excess money to pay down as much as you like extra per month and you don't get penalized any fees. All the banks have different revolving credits too. To all the boys that are based offshore outside of New Zealand, the best two banks that I've found that work the best are Westpac and ANZ for quite a few different reasons. Even for investment properties and serviceability, they're the two best banks that work best. So I think one practical thing I always tell guys to do is, if you're in New Zealand, when you're back here in June, if you've got time off or around Christmas time, whatever you do, just make sure you go and open bank accounts at ANZ and Westpac. It's such a practical thing, but it makes a huge difference because the hardest thing you can't get around at the moment is opening New Zealand bank accounts while offshore, unless you've got a private banker with a mandate to do that. So that's a big hurdle when guys come and get in contact and say, hey, you want to buy another property. But if you're at the wrong bank and you've had the wrong advice, then it doesn't really work no matter how good the investment advice is. But revolving credits are really good because at the end of the day, they can just act as your savings account. And you can dump all your excess savings into that and just offset sort of interest and mortgage. So you're saving rather than money just sitting in the bank accounts. You're saving overall on your mortgage. And in times of crisis, for guys that don't know if their next contract's coming or if there's going to be a reduction in pay, all of a sudden you can just dip into your revolving credit or flexi account if need be. And that's why having that mortgage structure from day one is key. Some guys just like the ability of a floating account, which is really similar to a flexi, but it's not redrawable. Floating accounts, you just pay it down, can lump some payments off it. But the key to a good flexi account is it needs to be an interest-only, non-reducing, redrawable facility. And as I say, It sounds like a crap lot of information there, but all the banks have different ones, and some have way better flexies or revolving credits, as they call them. Westpac, you can go unlimited. ANZ, you can go up to 350K. ASB, unfortunately, is only a $200,000 one for some guys that like to pay it off. But at the end of the day, if you can pay that off quickly, it just sits there and either acts as a deposit for another house or acts as a savings account. And they're just really, really good. So the right loan structure from day one makes a big difference.
Just a question from the floor. How hard is it to get a mortgage while you're playing overseas, earning your income?
I get asked that all the time. Not hard at all. Not hard at all. I thought it was really hard when I was based up in Dublin trying to ring a bank and just didn't get the right answer that I liked. You've just got to have a good advisor and a good mortgage broker that actually knows where to place you and which bank you to get it from, really. But if you've got good income, good service, and you're on strong money, just realize that you may be on really good money and convert it to New Zealand dollars, it's really good money, but all the banks scale your income at a different rate. If you're at BNZ, they'll scale your income by 50% before they even take into consideration what mortgage size you want to get. Some guys are already at ANZ and Westpac, and that's really good because they don't scale as much. So from that point of view, it's not hard to get a mortgage back here in New Zealand. You've just got to provide guys like myself with the right information, bank statements, contract, all those sorts of things. And it's pretty much straightforward. And we sort of streamline that for you. Even we don't like to use second tier lenders, what they're called, but sometimes they come into play for people that aren't on the biggest income. And there's places like Avanti Finance. It's not a dodgy finance company. At the end of the day, you use them when you have to. And the ideal thing for someone like Avanti is if you're not on huge income, they don't actually scale it that much. And without getting too complicated, you only ever want to stay there for about 12 to 18 months. And by then, we can take you back to a mainstream bank. If set up correctly. So there's always ways to help everyone around the world, really, if they actually really want to get a mortgage back here in New Zealand.
So what I'm hearing there is basically being in touch with someone like yourself or a good mortgage broker is to find a way, given someone's unique situation and their unique income, there's always a way.
Oh man, there's always a way. And that's one of our sort of mottos. I work for a young client, but young colleagues and who I've learnt off. And one thing I've learned from them is there's always a way. If you're one of these transaction-based brokers that just looks for the easiest deal and gets paid on, then it's no wonder there's a lot of brokers and financial advisors out there with a bad name. We'll go the extra mile to actually get it done because we believe there's always a way to get it done. And it's not often, I don't know if we've sort of failed, not sounding arrogant, but I don't think we've actually failed on getting someone the right deal or at least putting some stepping stones in place for them to get it in 12 months time. At the end of the day, we can't make you guys save money. They've got to actually go away and do that. But just realize that there's always a way to get it done. Whereas a lot of people are disheartened when they ring their bank and then turn around and get a no, and then they think that's it. There's always a way to get it done.
Nice. Thinking about the current situation, players across the world taking possible pay cuts and putting in a position where their income isn't what it used to be. Any advice around if someone wanted to renegotiate their mortgage, take one of those holidays that are on offer? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, the first thing you've got to do is actually be realistic and say, and actually ask for help. That's honestly the hardest step you actually can take. From there, it's just about saying, hey, what do you need to do? Ideally, you don't take a mortgage holiday if not needed. Like it'd be way better just to switch your loans to interest only, which means you're only paying the interest portion, which would free up a lot of cash flow, really, to not feel burdened by those bigger mortgage repayments. But if you can switch to interest only, it's a really simple thing to do in these times. The banks have been damn good, actually, and have streamlined the process on how it how you actually do that. So it's not really hard to do. If you do need a mortgage holiday, just understand that, yes, you can take it. You've got to show a reduction in your salary or your wage. But you've got to pay it all back at the end of your mortgage holiday, and your minimum repayments at the end of that time will be higher than what you did if you just switched to interest only. So all you've got to do is ask for help in that situation, and it's really easy to do and work through that process. The banks have actually been really good in how to streamline that.
And in line with that, if someone's signing up for a mortgage, obviously the term is also a consideration. You can go over a shorter period, say 15 years, but your payments are higher weekly. People by default often will go for, say, 30 years here in New Zealand. Any pros and cons of either of those?
Yeah, real big pros and cons, really. It's way smarter and with a little bit of advice to put your loan term over 30 years on minimum repayments, and then have a floating or a flex account to pay it down as hard as you can. If you flip that and put it on a 15-year loan term, they're going to be, your minimum repayment's going to be way higher. And if you retire through injury or have a change in circumstance or change in financial position, all of a sudden you can't change your minimum repayments. It's way smarter to put it over 30 years and just have accelerated payments and pay it off in 15 years than it is to put it on a 15-year loan term. And we've seen that more so in the last month. People have come in and was like, oh yeah, I actually put my interest on my mortgage over 15 years, but now my job's gone and I still have to keep up with those repayments, where they could have just left it over 30 years at a minimum repayment and pulled back on the accelerated payments, and all of a sudden that's in your bank account for times like these. So that's a real key around mortgage structure. We can still set it up for you to pay it off in 15 years, but always put it over 30 years so your minimum repayments are always low.
So that would provide a bit of a buffer, for, especially for professional athletes who have got, you know, the risk of contract to contract sort of living. What you're saying is it provides a bit of a buffer just in case you have a time where you've not got that income or the ups and downs of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, maybe one income drops off because a partner or wife gets pregnant and she was working. All of a sudden, you just don't need that financial stress on your life. So yeah, way smarter to put it over 30 years and just have accelerated, what they call accelerated payments. And hey, you can make it still, make you pay it off in 15 or 20 years, but if anything changed, if that next contract didn't come, your minimum repayments are way lower than what you would do if you put it over 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, nice. Just feel free to keep firing in the questions, people. We've probably got another sort of 10 or so minutes with Issa, so really valuable to grab his time. Just to think about you, bro, like, with what you've learned now in the finance game, post-career and even the property game, what sort of advice would you give a 20-year-old Issa Nathiwa or a 25-year-old Issa Nathiwa in this space if you were thinking about trying to get ahead?
Yeah, I would have just wished I had gone and sought advice from different areas early on. And you know, being in rugby bubbles and rugby circles, it's really easy to only hear what's being said in the changing room. You know, sometimes take that as gospel. And that's probably what I, you know, the same mistakes that I did. But if I just learned that earlier on, I would have definitely have understood what, how important it was to make the most of your income while you're earning income. And if you're earning, you know, if you're on a good contract, you've really got to make the most of that while it counts, because as soon as you don't have that income or that contract runs out, banks look at you completely differently. They don't look at you as a rugby player or a sportsman. They only look at what your salary and contract is. And from my own personal background, I just, when I stepped away the first time, I just thought, oh, I'll wait till the end and then sort it all when I retire. That was the dumbest mistake I ever made, because all of a sudden I had two great houses paid off, but I couldn't actually do anything with them because I didn't have a good income. So you've really got to make proactive steps to not procrastinate, not wait till the end of the season or wait till pre-season to do it. You've just got to actually get in touch and do it now, and do it while you're on that contract, or do it while you're at the start of your contract, because it's way more appealing to the bank to actually lend you money.
Yeah, nice. Holly, you got a question there?
Oh, I was on mute, sorry. Isa, just listening to all the details in the chat, and then the info, I'm sure I'm like everyone else, most of the guys here, yeah, it's exciting, but I wish I had someone to talk to like that when I was playing. Yeah. We always tend to rely on our agents. What would be your advice? Do we just keep pushing on our agents, especially PI players, or do you? Would you advise the PI players? You got to get out on your own and look for all these. And it's not just a mortgage broker like yourself, or a lawyer, or those sides when you retired. Would you recommend just keep hassling your agent that this is your job, or do you have to get out and do it and hustle yourself?
Mate, I know a lot of the agents really well. I have arguments with them weekly around this sort of stuff. And like, agents aren't financial advisors. And agents have relationships. It's like, go and see this guy at the bank, he'll sort you out. That's not advice. Because when you go to that bank, they're gonna only give you your product. So if you've got an agent out there that's just saying, oh, go and see this guy at Westpac, go and see this guy at ASB, that's not advice. I made those mistakes. And I thought it was a great idea that I was going to do all my banking with ANZ and just leave it all there at the time. And that's just what my agent, well, it wasn't really an agent really, but just be wary that if they have relationships with people, then they're going to put you in that, go to see that person. That might not be the best thing for you. So I wish I had met a mortgage broker way earlier on in my career, because I would have understood all the benefits that they could have provided me way earlier on. So I know how heavily some guys rely on agents, but just think, if they've only got these people to look after and go and see these people, then they're only aligning you to that, where there's always way better advice out there, whether it's accountants, solicitors, and it's not always going to charge, they're not always going to charge you a fortune.
Nice, bro. Now, just going into the floor here, simple ones, but I think we all love to hear your advice. With what's going on now, is it a good time to invest, with COVID-19 and or is it not that?
Yeah, so it's a great question. We get asked that, every day at the moment. We always say the time to invest is when you're ready. And I know that sounds a bit blasé, but unfortunate thing is the rich get richer in times of crisis. The smart get richer in times of crisis. So they see this as an opportunity, really. The only way, we don't have a crystal ball, but look, in Auckland in particular, some of the big regions in New Zealand, like there's been a shortage of property for a long time. There's been a shortage of good houses for a long time. After this crisis, there's still going to be a big shortage of houses and good properties. So if you can get in, you get in while you can, because I'm not here to flick properties and be a crystal ball and say, oh, we're in a high market or a low market. If you're going to hold property for a long time, and I mean 5 to 10 years, That's how you ride through the ups and downs and crises along the way. Because, even after GFC, I think New Zealand house prices dropped about 5%. We're probably going to see a dip or a plateau in prices. But, in good areas on good properties, there's always a demand for that. And if you're smart, you'll still get in now. But you still don't want to actually over leverage and be stressed about it. But the key is, if you're ready to buy, buy is all we'd say. You're going to hold it for a long term anyway.
And would that, if you're thinking about the difference between buying and building, we're hearing at the moment, especially in New Zealand, probable massive losses of jobs through the construction industry, people cancelling builds because of their changes in income. Would you think, again, that presents opportunity for the players who have got a bit of money and ready to go in terms of negotiating with construction companies and then also getting started a bit quicker?
Yeah, there's, once again, it sort of depends on what developer you deal with, where the development is. or a whole range of things. But the good thing, there's always, you know, building from new, you're sort of exempt from some of these 30% deposits if you're an investor from overseas that you have to put down. And, you know, putting, for instance, we get developers across our books every month offering us stuff, and the majority of stuff we turn around and just say no thanks. There's one investor in particular that's done a lot in Wellington and is now doing stuff in Auckland, and best thing about him is he always picks really, really good areas. He's done another one in Hamilton in a really, really good area, and he's got a proven track record that he just sent, even in COVID-19, he just sent us, gave us free rights to look at these ones. There's only about 12 properties, and he gave us that about 7 or 8 days ago. There's none left. So those are the types of investments, as long as they're good, you know, solid construction, good track record, then there's no harm going down those sorts of lines. Sometimes you only have to put down a, you know, minimal deposit, 5%, because you don't actually have to come up with the rest of the money for sort of 18 months time, which gives you the time to sort of source finance or just get pre-approval now, but know that you don't actually have to service it for 12 months time. So, you know, as I say, like, everyone's situation is different. Some people like existing homes, but the right development at the end of the day is still a good move.
Nice. Just a question from Florida. Joe Royals piped up and said, I wonder if you've had any experience dealing with banks building on multi-land.
Whoo! Yeah, that my guy owns my company. His best mate is part of an iwi down in Mission Bay area. You know, a big plot of land over there. And it's different. There's a lot of hurdles to cross and a lot of red tape to actually come away with the plot of land that you're allowed to build on. We can go on a website and, you know, look up any property, but when you look at some of these iwis where there's, you know, 300-400 property names of people that are entitled to the property, it's sometimes a hurdle. But as long as you can organize title for the property and understand what that title is, then there's a way to get it done. I think I've only probably done one, and that was quite a clean cut one. So there's a little bit of work involved, but it's definitely doable.
Yeah, awesome. Any more questions from the floor? We're about to wind it up. We've been online for a fair bit, and there's a few just coming in. Bro, like, even to talk about outside of property, to wind it back around your transition and so forth, is there any other things that you'd pass on to players in terms of, we talked about that first 3-6 months coming out of it, but even in your time now, in workshops last week, we said, you know, we talked about missing the camaraderie and the connectivity of rugby. In that sort of space, have you had some personal lessons for yourself?
Stay active. I know how blasé and well-being that sounds, but honestly, man, like, we're all used to working hard, and I think you sort of take for granted that, you know, you work hard and it's hard as a team, and you pull each other through. At the end of it, you sort of just accept the session's done. You'll find yourself in challenging times, like, to try and get up and do exercise, but as soon as you've done it, you feel 10 times better. So yeah, definitely staying active makes a big difference in my life. And I knew that from the first time around, because, you know, once you sort of let it go, it's quite hard to get back. But I think, you know, take the time to just, when you know you're coming up in transition year, you're coming up to actually step away from the game, just take some time before you finish to actually prepare for it. Whether that's 12 months before, 6 months before, just, you know, talk about it too, because often your other half, that's sometimes where the pressures come from. Sometimes you've got a really supportive family. And the last thing you want to do is sort of bottle that all up inside. And I think lastly, you've just got to actually ask for help when you need it. You know, we're proud rugby players at the end of the day, but if you can actually just ask for help, you'd be amazed at how many people are actually just willing to help you and help you get ahead. There's a lot of good people out there. So, you know, don't just sit back and say nothing. Always, you know, reach out for help if you need it. All it is a phone call or a text. It seems like such a massive hurdle, but as soon as you do it, you'll feel 10 times better.
Yeah, nice. Just seen a question come in around using of a landlord or not. If you're an investment property owner, I know some guys will try and manage it because they don't want to carve off a margin. Leonard, what's your thinking there?
Man, honestly, 100% use a property manager. Someone that is recommended, someone that is trusted, because, you know, if you're over the other side of the world, you want to know that your asset is being well looked after and you don't want to put that burden on your family. I'd made this mistake. I probably got my mum and dad to mind one of my properties, but luckily it was my friends in it at the time. But then I think, man, if they had to deal with tenants and landlords and the tenancy tribunal and all that stuff, it's just putting such a stress on someone else's shoulder. Yes, it's a upfront cost and it's going to carve your margin slightly, but if you aren't needing that income to live off, then it's all sort of tax deductible at the end of the day. And for the right reasons, it's peace of mind to know that your asset is being well looked after. You don't have to worry about sourcing tenants, the tenancy tribunal. Tenants have a lot of rights at the end of the day. And if someone isn't up to scratch with that, I just think it's a really well used cost to actually put towards a property just for peace of mind and to not have to worry about that stress. You don't want to get calls at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, can you fix the water cylinder? You know, fingers crossed they just look after that all for you. And all it takes is a couple of good recommendations to get a good property manager.
You know.
With guys overseas, owning their house and properties, and all of a sudden you get told, you got to move back to NZ. Is there any advice, or is it just plain simple? You've got to sell your house there before you can move on, moving back.
Nah, not at all, man. Like if you're, sorry, do you mean if you're, is that property where they are?
Yeah, if they own a house in England or France,
yeah,
and they get told within 2 weeks that your contract's finished, you're moving back to New Zealand, and that panic time there, is there any way to ease that transition, or is it just plain simple? You got to wait in France and you sell your house, get that money, then you move.
Well, yeah, that's always pretty niggly. You know, we would look at it and say, like, can you keep that asset first and foremost? Like, you know, are you able to rent that out and move back to New Zealand and all of this? If you can't, yeah, reality is, like, if for some people that might have to sell, that's not a super quick process to do. And that's why I'd be asking for help in your local region for someone to help you through all that. Because selling a house can take, you know, 2 weeks, it can take 2, 3, 4 months. So, yeah, I think you just have to ask for help for people in the area where your property is, especially if you're wanting to sell it. You know, if the numbers worked and you could rent it out quite successfully, you know, there's no harm in keeping an asset over the other side of the world if you really understand it.
Well, just a question around deposit again, just back one from the floor, especially we've got Luke O'Connor, who's a female player on a lower level contract, and people want to say Mitre 10 contracts or even overseas. Yep. Around who do they go to around some of that sort of financial planning advice to just get to that deposit?
Yes, ma'am. Going to a broker, going to someone recommended, absolutely. Like, yeah, I deal with a lot of first home buyers, young people on Mitre 10 cup contracts to say, hey, this is where you're at right now. If you want to be ready to buy a house in 12 months' time, or at least be on that ladder, these are the numbers you have to hit. This is the Mitre 10 cup contract. This is how you're going to live. This is what needs to be put away. So budgeting from an early age massively helps you get into your first home easy as. Mitre 10 cup people that are on minimal contracts, and I just say, hey, look, the reality is this is what you need to do over the next 12 months. And majority of the people like that are motivated to buy a house will go away and do that. And you know, with that and on KiwiSaver, all of a sudden you've got a 5-10% deposit. And as long as you're at the right bank, within 12 months, you might be taking that step towards getting your first home. So getting a rock solid budget is massively part of our ethos. You know, first home buyers, like, it's a really hard thing to do is to generate the deposit. We can't make you save at the end of the day. We can just always give you the guidelines and how to do it.
Yeah, nice, man. And just before we wind it up, I think there's probably plenty of people online here who are going to reach out. We'll be able to post up this some of the notes from this and also context for you, Issa, to get in touch with everybody. Just to give people an idea, like, how does a financial advisor or mortgage broker, how do you make your money? Like, what's the cost for a person to engage with someone professional like yourself?
Yeah, so I sort of, I always had a solicitor slash agent. They didn't charge me fees to do my contracts. He did all my contracts for me and didn't charge me a thing. I stay true to that too. It doesn't cost to use my services. If I get you a mortgage, I get paid by the banks anyway. I get paid by insurance companies anyway. So I don't charge fees to any rugby players. It's my little way of giving back. You might go to, I don't want to bag companies here because everyone's different, but you might go to somewhere like Enable Me, which is a mortgage brokerage company, but they might charge you $6,000 for the year. I'll do all that. And it's just sort of my way of giving back is I don't charge rugby players fees. You get paid by the banks anyway, and that's where you sort of strip the greed and bad name out of the finance industry, which there's a lot of greed. So I don't charge rugby players. It's just my sort of my little rule and way to give back to rugby people.
Awesome, man. Hey, I just want to thank on behalf of everybody on the call. Thanks for your time. It's actually been really enlightening. And learned a lot. I'm sure everybody here has. So everyone, thanks for joining us, taking your time out. Issa, thanks, bro, especially at the morning time with the kids.
Nah, sweet as, man. They've been knocking on the door a little bit, so I think that's what working from home is like. My three-year-old will burst through the door any time now, so it's awesome to hear from everyone, see all the familiar names out there. Happy to help out, even if it's just for a yarn. Look, as I say, I don't charge anything for it. Sometimes you just need a voice to call and someone to listen to. So really awesome to speak to everyone today.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks very much, everybody. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. Check out PacificRugbyPlayers.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter to stay on top of all news relating to Pacific Rugby Players and to find out when we drop our next episode of PRP Radio.